Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion Bo, which is from Exodus 10:1 through 13:16. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video right now and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
The portion of Bo recounts the final plagues against Egypt and the first Passover, in which God humbles Egypt by striking down all the firstborn in the land, but spares, redeems, and delivers Israel through the blood of innocent lambs, bringing his people out of Egypt to serve him freely.
So last portion, we read about 7 of the 10 plagues. And so this portion, we are going to read about the other 3. And this portion begins with God basically saying to Moses, over and over again, I've hardened Pharaoh's heart so that I can keep doing these plagues on Egypt when he refuses to let you go. And he says that the reason why he hardens Pharaoh is so that you may tell in the hearing of your son and of your grandson how I made a mockery of the Egyptians and how I performed my signs among them, that you may know that I am Adonai.
So last portion, throughout all the plagues, we saw God kept revealing more of his power through each plague. Mm-hmm. And he was showing Pharaoh and the Egyptians more of his power until finally, with the last plague we got to, it had gotten to the point where he was showing his power to kill the Egyptians.
Yeah.
From here, God's basically saying to Moses, at this point, I'm just full on judging the Egyptians, bringing down all my severity on them to show my power to the people of Israel. It's not about showing his power to Egypt anymore. It's about making Egypt a witness for Israel to remember forever.
And again, right here at the end, it just says, that you may know that I am the Lord, I am Adonai, I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. We've been reading over and over again how God keeps attaching his name to, I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I am your God. And so basically, he's just saying, with all 10 of these plagues, I am showing to the people of Israel forever that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is the God of Israel. And that will be repeated from generation to generation. This will stick with the people of Israel. And here we are, over 3,000 years later, still repeating what God did for us in Egypt.
So Moses and Aaron go to Pharaoh, like they've done a bunch of times already. They tell him the next plague. The next plague is going to be locusts. Mm. A huge, massive swarm of them, unlike anyone had ever seen or ever would see again. Completely unparalleled devastation. And we had read last portion that the hail had completely destroyed Egypt's crops, but they had some more crops that were late in coming up, so they weren't completely
right. They had a chance to recover.
Right. But now Moses is saying everything that was left from the hail, the locusts are going to eat. So there will be no more crops in all of Egypt.
Yeah, you're going to be starting completely from scratch.
So when Pharaoh's servants hear this, they counsel Pharaoh. They say, look, can't you see that they're destroying Egypt? You have to let these people go. You can't keep being stubborn about this. They're going to ruin us. And so Pharaoh, he's like, fine, I'll talk to them. He calls Moses and Aaron, and he says, fine, go, serve your God, but just the men, okay? Like, all your men can go serve God, but leave the other people.
Specifically the children. He asked, who are you taking with you? And Moses says, we're taking everybody, our old men, our young men, everybody. And Pharaoh basically says, there's evil in your mind. Why would I ever let your little ones go? Only your men can go.
What Pharaoh actually says is, the Lord be with you if ever I let you and your little ones go. So he's like, he's basically taunting God. He's saying, like I would ever let your little ones go. If I let your children go, then God must really be with you. Implying that God isn't with them, and so he's not going to let their children go.
Oy.
So it's like a direct challenge to God, saying, if God really does exist, then I'll let the children go.
After he's already been told by his own people, Egypt is being destroyed because of what these dudes are doing, let them go and serve their God. So Pharaoh is just again exalting himself above God. And when Moses and Aaron first appeared to him before warning about this plague, they say, thus says Adonai, the God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me, let my people go that they may serve me. So Pharaoh is saying, it'll be a little while before I start, before I humble myself.
And so Pharaoh thinks, even if I let their men go, I'm somehow pacifying them. Mm-hmm. But I still get to keep their family, so they have to come back. Mm. So I'm still keeping the people of Israel. And Moses says, no, that's not good enough. We go with everyone. And Pharaoh says, no, only your men may go. And he casts Moses and Aaron out of Pharaoh's presence.
And so God says to Moses, well, there's your answer. Stretch out your hand and there will be locusts. And locusts there are. It darkens the sky such that no one can even see each other. There are so many locusts swarming all throughout Egypt. And they're destroying everything. They are eating every green thing that exists anywhere in Egypt. So they've already had their cattle die. They have hardly any of that left. And so now all the plants are gone. So basically, all of their anything of livelihood is gone. And so Pharaoh calls Moses. It says he hurriedly called Moses and Aaron and says, I've sinned against Adonai your God and against you. Please forgive my sin only this once and make supplication to Adonai your God that he would only remove this death from me. So Pharaoh realizes once he's seeing this devastation, this spells out the death of his nation. Everything else before was bad, but this is impacting Egypt for the future, majorly so. And Moses does pray to God on behalf of Pharaoh. And God takes a wind that blows all the locusts into the sea. Pharaoh has been sinning against Israel over and over and over again. And he's admitted he was sinning. And he's been haughty. He's admitted he's sinned before. And then when the plague goes away, Pharaoh goes back to sinning. But that doesn't stop God from listening to Moses' prayer on behalf of Pharaoh. All Pharaoh needs to do to stop the plague is ask Moses to ask God. That's it. And then to avoid another plague, all he has to do is do what Moses says. This is all in the hands of Pharaoh. God has the power, but he is giving Pharaoh the entirety of the choice. But God is hardening Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh is hardening his own heart. And so when all the locusts are gone, he doesn't let Israel go.
So then for the next plague, God doesn't even bother to send Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh. He just tells Moses, stretch out your hand. We're going to do a new plague. It's going to be darkness over all the land of Egypt. And the darkness is going to be so thick that it will be felt.
Mm. And so during the 3 days when there's total darkness, no one can do anything. They have to stay at home and sit there and do nothing. Because how can you do anything when there's absolute complete darkness that you can even feel? So like if you can feel the darkness, that would impact your sense of touch, which is the only thing you can use to navigate in the dark. So he's completely disabled the entire nation for 3 days.
Well, what was the first thing that God created?
Light.
The very first thing. And so God has already taken away Egypt's water supply and Egypt's cattle and their crops. And now he's taking away the only thing they have left, light. The universal constant that he created right at the start, he's taking that away from Egypt. Mm. But he leaves it for the people of Israel. Once again, showing the distinction he's making, like he's done through all the plagues. He protects his people Israel to show he's the God of Israel. So then Pharaoh calls Moses again, just like we've seen him do a bunch of times. And this time he says, go ahead, serve God.
Even your little ones can go.
And so last time he said, your God is with you if I let your little ones go. And now he's saying your little ones can go. So. But Pharaoh is still trying to keep the people of Israel in his grasp. Mm. Because he says, you have to leave your flocks and herds, though. You guys can all go, but if you want your property, you have to come back here.
And more than that, though, the Israelites would basically not have anything. They'd just be escaping with their lives and the clothes on their back, but not much else, which isn't what God promised. God promised that they would come up with possessions, many possessions. And so if they leave behind all of their animals, then all of God's preserving of their animals and all that, and God's promise to Abraham don't matter.
Yeah, I mean, the people of Israel are shepherds. They have been for generations. So the livestock is their livelihood. They can't just leave it behind and be fine.
And more than that, Moses' main concern is we need to sacrifice to God. We don't know exactly what animals God's going to want us to sacrifice. We need to have all of our animals with us because God wants a sacrifice. So more than this being for the sake of Israel, they need to bring their flocks for God's sake, to serve God. Let my people go that they may serve me.
Yeah, from the beginning, that's what Moses has been saying to Pharaoh. We need to go so we can have a feast to God in the wilderness. A feast requires the sacrifices, requires the animals. And Pharaoh's saying, no, you can't have the animal.
That's like saying you can have a feast, but no food. That's what he's saying.
And so when Moses says no, God hardens Pharaoh's heart again. Mm-hmm. Through all the previous plagues, God sent the plague. Pharaoh called Moses. Pharaoh said, please pray that the plague will subside. And then the plague subsides. But this time, God sent this plague of darkness. Pharaoh called Moses, and Pharaoh said to him, get away from me. Take care never to see my face again, for on the day you see my face, you shall die. Mm.
So at this point, Pharaoh's not even concerned about anything except that he's angry. He's not trying to think of the welfare of Egypt. He's not trying to make the plagues go away. All he's thinking about is, I hate Moses. That's what it's come down to, is I hate Moses and I hate his God.
Through all the plagues, Moses was there as a source of mercy and forgiveness. Because, as you said, anytime Pharaoh turned to Moses, Moses prayed to God, the plague would go away. But here is Pharaoh shutting down his opening, his path to mercy. God has sent a plague, and instead of turning to Moses to pray that God removes the plague, he's telling Moses, I don't want you, I don't want your forgiveness, just get out of here. Mm. God sent one to all of us as a way of salvation.
The only way of salvation.
Yeshua came to deliver us from our sins. It's been written that he who is believing in him is not judged, but he who is not believing has been judged already because he has not believed in the name of the one and only Son of God. Yeshua came to all of us as a way out. But if we are like Pharaoh and we react to him with, get away from me, I don't believe in you, I don't want to see your face, then there's nothing left for us except judgment, just like Pharaoh is about to receive. Judgment and death. Yeshua offers life, but we have to come to him.
Humbly. We cannot come to him proudly. Multiple times, Pharaoh came to the bargaining table pridefully, saying, I'm still in control, trying to control how things would play out. Instead of coming to him humbly and submitting to God. If we try to come to God pridefully, he will cut us down. He resists the proud.
But he's still always there to show mercy. Mm-hmm. Even as you're trying to negotiate with him and get above him, he's still there to show mercy if you will reach for it. But if you shut him down, he's not going to show you mercy because you already separated yourself from his mercy. You were separated from him. He sent his son to bring you near to him, and then you cut yourself off again, and there's nothing left. So don't be like Pharaoh. Come to salvation. Come to Yeshua. Don't cut him off.
So at the beginning of chapter 11, God tells Moses, I'm going to send one final plague. And after this 10th plague, Pharaoh will finally let the people of Israel go.
So basically, Pharaoh said, get away from me. You're never going to see my face again. Moses says, you're right, I'm never going to see your face again. And then God says to Moses, wait, I'm going to bring one more plague on Egypt. This is the last one. And Moses says to Pharaoh, God is going to come down and he's going to kill all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, including the firstborn of Pharaoh. Mm. So he's telling Pharaoh right now, your son is going to die.
Which we saw all the way back in the first portion of Exodus. Because you have held on to my firstborn son, I'm going to kill your firstborn son, is what God said to Pharaoh. He said Israel was his firstborn, so I'm going to kill Pharaoh's firstborn.
And so Moses says, every firstborn in all of Egypt is going to die, even the firstborn of the cattle. But for Israel, not one of their firstborn will die, not even a dog will growl against them, because God makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. Moses has already told this to Pharaoh a bunch of times. Moses is basically saying, for the last time, all right, fine, you're not going to see my face again, but a bunch of people are going to die, and it's because of you. Good day. And he walks out in hot anger.
Yeah. And then God says to Moses, Pharaoh is not going to listen to you. That's it. And I'm going to do this last plague. But before that plague, Moses says to the people of Israel, everyone needs to go and ask their neighbor for gold and silver. And God gave the people of Israel favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and they did give them silver and gold. And later in this portion, it'll say, thus they plundered the Egyptians. So this is a preparation for them getting ready to go out because, again, like God said to Abraham, they're going to come out of there with many possessions. So this is going to be the fulfillment of that. They're getting a bunch of possessions from the people of Israel. So adding insult to injury, not only is Egypt going to be stripped of all of its livelihood, now they're being stripped of all of their possessions.
Through the plagues, God took away everything Egypt needed, all their livestock, all their crops. But one thing he did not touch through all the plagues were their silver and gold jewelry, the stuff that's completely useless for life, but it helps for having possessions and being rich. So now God's taking even that from them and giving it to his people Israel.
And I mean, interestingly, we're going to see later in the Torah, later in the book of Exodus, they're going to be building the tabernacle and all that, and it's got to be made out of gold and silver. This is where they're getting it. They're getting it from the Egyptians.
Yeah.
So even though it seems like stuff they don't need, they absolutely need all of this stuff.
The Egyptians don't, though.
So then in chapter 12, Moses begins to prepare the people of Israel for the Passover, the night when God is going to pass over their houses as he destroys the Egyptian firstborn. And so he proceeds to give a bunch of commands for that specific night and also for everlasting statutes for the people of Israel going forward. And so this is kind of a preview of what a lot of the rest of the Torah is going to look like, where Moses is giving instructions to the people, detailed instructions and commands for how they're supposed to behave and what they're supposed to be doing for them and for their offspring after them.
Yeah, this is the first time Moses starts giving the people of Israel a
Torah.
Yeah, a large set of instructions on how to live. And it's interesting because it's before they've even left Egypt, before Pharaoh has even said, you can go. But these people were God's people long before they came into Egypt, much less before they come out. And so God has the authority to give these commands. And God's saying, I'm going to deliver you on this night. And so starting now, you have to start following my rules.
And you have to start following my rules. And not only are these going to be rules for you to keep here in Egypt for this night, but there are instructions for you to keep when you make it to the promised land. So in this, God is also promising that they'll return to the land. The first thing that God commands is basically the establishment of their calendar, saying this month that we're in right now is going to be the first month of the year for you. So this first month, which later in this portion is called Aviv, or Abib in English, this month is going to be the first month of the year. So I just want to take a quick side note and say that in Judaism, the first month of the year is considered to be the month of Rosh Hashanah, the seventh month of the year. So here in Exodus, God is establishing the month that Passover happens in, that's the first month of the year for you.
God's going to have a lot more commands later on about his appointed times and special holy days for Israel. And they're all going to be structured around this calendar. And so God's starting that calendar right here. He's saying, this is the beginning. This is the new year.
And this is where you start your journey.
All the special times start from here.
And then God begins to lay out his instructions for this first appointed time. He says that on the 10th day of the month, each household is to take one lamb or goat and set it aside from the rest of the flock. Now, this lamb has to be unblemished. It needs to be perfect. And they have to set it apart for 4 days, take it away from the rest of the flock and leave it by itself and take care of it for 4 days. So not only is this lamb unblemished, meaning it's a perfect lamb, you couldn't ask for a better lamb, but also it's set apart. In other words, it's holy. And then on the 14th evening of this first month, they are to sacrifice this lamb. They're to slaughter it at twilight. The Hebrew means between the evenings. So basically between sunset and darkness. So during dusk, essentially, is when they're supposed to sacrifice this lamb. And then they're supposed to take the blood of this lamb and they're going to paint it on the doorposts and the mantle of their doors. And the reason why they're supposed to do this is that when God goes through the land to kill all the firstborn, he'll see the blood on the doorposts and it'll be a sign so that God won't go into that house and kill the firstborn. So I just want to take a moment to stop and really consider what this lamb is accomplishing as it's being sacrificed. God is going through Egypt to kill all the firstborn. And yes, God has said that he's making a distinction between Israel and Egypt. But what he's basically saying is that the distinction is being made through the blood of these lambs. If there was no blood, God wouldn't see that blood and he would enter into that house and kill the firstborn. So this lamb is dying to save the lives of those within. In essence, this lamb is dying in place of the firstborn. This is a similar concept to what we saw back with the binding of Isaac, when the ram was offered in place of his son Isaac, because God had said, sacrifice Isaac, and so his life was owed, but then he was able to sacrifice the ram in his place. So here, God has said, I'm killing all the firstborn, but you can kill this lamb instead.
But it can't just be any lamb. It has to be the lamb that is acceptable to God. Mm. And it's acceptable to him because it's perfect. Only a perfect lamb is suitable to take the place of these firstborn whose lives are owed. These Passover lambs paint a very good image of Yeshua. He's called the Lamb of God who's taking away the sin of the world. Mm-hmm. He's called our Passover who was sacrificed for us. He was a perfect lamb, unspotted and unblemished. And he took our place. We deserve death. And because he came as a perfect lamb, he was able to be that substitute for us. Yeah. Our lives were owed, but his blood is able to cover that.
God sees the blood of Yeshua, and he sees he doesn't deserve death anymore.
The blood of the lambs was able to be a substitute for the people of Israel when God passed over their homes and saw the blood painted on their doorposts. In the same way, Yeshua's blood can take our place, but only if we paint that blood on the doorposts of our hearts. Mm. If we put that blood where anyone can see it, and we do that through believing in him and through proclaiming him. It says if you confess with your mouth that Yeshua is master and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. When we do that, we're showing that we're accepting his sacrifice, that we're bringing it to our house, more or less, our heart. And so God will see that and we will be saved. Our lives will be spared. His blood will make a separation between us and the rest of the world who's coming to judgment.
That judgment will pass over us on judgment day.
I found this concept of painting the lamb blood on the doorposts really interesting because something else Moses will talk about later is writing the commands on your doorposts. Mm. A lot of practicing Jews will probably be familiar with that because in Judaism, that's been applied today in the form of a mezuzah, which is a little box that contains a few commands and they put it on their doorpost. But I found this really interesting because, yes, it's important to have the commands on the doorposts, whether that's literal or figurative. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But the idea of having the commands on your doorposts is important, but that's not the only thing that's supposed to be on your doorposts. God specifically commands this blood to go on your doorposts every year. Mm. And this blood delivered the people of Israel. It's good and important to have the commands, but writing the commands on your doorpost doesn't keep God from going into that house to strike the firstborn. Mm. Only the blood can do that. Mm. And I think that just shows so also in our hearts. Only Yeshua's blood can deliver us. The commands are good and righteous and holy. And we should have them on our hearts and in our minds always. But no amount of mitzvot can deliver us. Mm. No amount of knowing the commands or doing the commands can deliver us from the judgment that comes from death.
Only the blood of the Lamb of God.
Only the blood of the Lamb of God on the doorposts of our hearts can truly deliver us.
Another aspect of the Passover lamb is that this sacrifice is actually to be eaten by the people of Israel who are slaughtering it. It says that each household kills the lamb, and then they roast it with fire, and they eat it. They eat it with matzah and maror, not leaving any of it until morning, and eating it in haste, with their staves in their hand, ready to leave the land of Egypt.
But especially this concept of eating the sacrifice, it once again reminds me of Yeshua, because Yeshua calls on us to eat his flesh. When he said that, most people were very shocked and
very
offended.
Upset. Yeah.
How is this one able to give us his flesh to eat? But what Yeshua was saying is that he's like the Passover. He's the sacrifice that comes to save, and we live not only by painting his blood, but also by eating him. He nourishes us. We've talked about this before when we were talking about how Joseph provides grain. Mm. And in the same way, Yeshua gave himself as food to save. This lamb, this sacrifice, nourishes. So also, Yeshua nourishes our souls if we eat him. It may sound strange, but we eat him.
Yeah, and more than that, the idea of eating Yeshua's flesh is basically tying it back to us participating in the sacrifice. It's not like the other sacrifices in Torah where the priests are doing it and the people, all they supply is the animal. In this case, we are participating in Yeshua's act of sacrificing himself by consuming him. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, "The cup of the blessings that we bless, is it not the sharing of the blood of the Messiah? And the bread that we break, is it not the sharing of the body of the Messiah? Because there is one bread, we the many are one body, for we all share of the one bread. Look at the people of Israel. Are not those eating the sacrifices sharers of the altar?" So basically, by eating Yeshua's flesh, we are becoming sharers of him. We are partaking of him, of his body, and we are his body. By eating the Passover, that is going inside of you. It's not something happening to you. It's something that's happening in you. You're internalizing it. You're being nourished by it, and you're living by it.
Just as the people of Israel were eating the sacrifice and so becoming sharers of it, when we live by Yeshua, when we take him as our sustenance, we're sharing in him. And that's the only way his life can sustain us.
Now, we've gone pretty in-depth about talking about the Passover, and we'll actually be talking more about the Passover lamb later in this portion. But I just wanted to stop really quick and mention that on our channel, we do have another video. It's a 4-minute animated video about how the Passover lamb is a picture of Yeshua. And it's a quick, concise way to explain it so that you can understand it better, and also to help unbelieving Jews to understand Yeshua's sacrifice better. So if you're interested, you can go check out that video. So God says here, the night of Passover is to be celebrated as a feast, as an everlasting statute. And it says throughout your generations. So basically, God is commanding here that for as long as there are Jews, there will be Passover. You have to keep Passover. And so every Torah observant Jew to this day keeps Passover. And that includes the Master Yeshua, a Torah observant Jew himself.
In fact, it was the day before Yeshua was crucified that Passover was. And so he said, "I want to keep the Passover with my disciples." And so he and his disciples found a place and they prepared the Pesach, the Passover lamb, just as is commanded here in the Torah.
Yeah. So for any Jews out there who don't know, the Last Supper, that was Passover.
And he not only kept it with the lamb, he also kept it with matzah, just as is commanded. And as Yeshua was keeping this Pesach with his disciples, it says that he took the matzah bread and he blessed it and he broke it and he gave it to his disciples and he said to them, "Take, eat. This is my body." And then he did the same thing with
the fruit of the vine.
Yeah, the fruit of the vine. He gave thanks and he distributed it and he said to them, "Drink of it, all of you. For this is my blood of the Brit, of the covenant, that for many is being poured out for release of sins." So, when Yeshua kept the Pesach, he pointed it to himself. Like we already said, he linked himself to the blood of the Lamb. And he said, my blood is going to be poured out for release from sin. And similarly, with the matzah, he called on his disciples to eat him as they eat the matzah.
He's saying, do this to the remembrance of me. So basically he's saying, whenever you keep Passover, remember me. This is where Yeshua is saying, I am the Passover lamb, essentially.
Yeah, in the Torah, we have right here, Moses is saying, this is a memorial day for you. This is a day for remembering. This is a day for remembering what God did for your people and how he delivered you.
And so Yeshua is saying, remember how I delivered you. I delivered you from your sins.
Exactly. And another thing he says is, and I say to you that I will not drink this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it with you new in the reign of my Father. So Yeshua kept the Pesach. He did this feast keeping. And at the same time, he said, I'm leaving. I'm going to have another feast with you in the reign of my Father.
Mm.
So even then, as he's remembering what happened to his people thousands of years ago, and he's remembering and calling his disciples to remember what's about to happen, he's also telling them to remember the feast that will be a feast better than that of Passover, of a day when we're all reigning with the Father, and a glorious and festive day that will be.
The last thing that God says to them about Passover before they actually have Passover is that this event will be an ordinance for you and your children forever. And it will come to pass when you're in the land, your children will ask you, what is this avodah you have? Or what is this service? Or what is this rite that you're doing? Then you'll say to your children, it is the Passover sacrifice to Adonai who passed over the houses of the sons of Israel in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians but spared our homes. So Moses is saying that Passover is inherently about the coming generations. You do this to teach your children what God did, to make sure that they never forget what God did for the people of Israel, how God chose the people of Israel, how he made a distinction between the people of Israel and the Egyptians, and how God has the power to save. He's saying that Passover will stand as a memorial, as a statute, as a sign to the people of Israel forever about who Adonai is.
I mean, what did he say right at the beginning of the portion? I will show these signs of mine among them, that you may tell in the hearing of your son and of your grandson how I have dealt with the Egyptians. This is codifying that. This is giving the perfect opportunity for everyone to always tell their son and their grandson about how God treated the Egyptians and how God delivered us.
Mm.
This event is the beginning of Israel's independence.
Mm. It's foundational to the core of what it means to be Jewish.
Exactly. It's kind of like their Independence Day of sorts. But there's a reason why it's the beginning of their year, because it's the beginning of who they are.
Mm.
It's the starting place. And it always comes back around to that. Again and again and again in the Torah and the rest of Scripture, it always comes back around to, I am Adonai.
Yeah.
I delivered you from Egypt.
Exactly. Even things like Shabbat, we'll see. It's remember that I set you free from Egypt. Everything stems from this point. This is the birthing of the people of Israel. So now after all the preparations have been made and all the commands have been given, the plague finally happens. The people of Israel have sacrificed their lambs, and the people of Egypt have not. And it says that at midnight, Adonai struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And then it says, there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was no home where there was not someone dead. I do want to note, though, there was not a single home where there was not someone dead. And that includes the home of the Hebrews. But instead of the firstborn being dead, it was the death of the Passover lambs. And so finally, Pharaoh calls for Moses and Aaron and tells them, get up and get out of here. Go now, take all your people, take all your animals, worship Adonai your God, just as you've been saying, take your flocks and your herds, and bless me too. And so just like that, the people of Israel have been set free. And they hurry out of there. God said to eat the Passover in haste. They're going out of there in haste.
And the Egyptians are in haste too. They all have seen
the death that comes from coming against the people of God.
Exactly. And so they're urgent to get everyone out. They say, we're all going to be dead if they don't get out of here. So with the Egyptians practically pushing them out and they themselves running to get out, they pack up, they take all their possessions from all their plunderings.
Yeah.
And they get out of there. And they take their dough with them for their bread before it's leavened, before it's risen.
Because they don't have time for it to rise. Leaven takes time to rise. It has to sit at the right temperature and it has to rise. They don't have time for that. They need to go now.
Exactly. So they get up, they go, 600,000 of them.
And then some. There's also a mixed multitude that goes with them. There were Egyptians. There were people from other nations who saw the God of Israel and wanted to go with the people of Israel.
And that's just the men too.
Yeah, there were also a bunch of women and children. Truly, God is bringing about what he said, that he would bring out his people as a great nation, and they would go out with many possessions. And the nation that enslaved them, God would judge. God promised all of this, and it's coming true. And in fact, he said they would be slaves for 400 years. And it says here that after 430 years to the day, the people of Israel are leaving Egypt. That's how long the sons of Israel lived. So from the time that Jacob and his sons went to live in Egypt to the time that they're now coming out, 430 years. Hey, so after we finished filming this episode that you're watching right now, we realized that there was something important that we forgot to bring up, which is that the Exodus itself is a messianic foreshadowing. The prophet Hosea says, "Out of Egypt I called my son." And we'd already seen previously that God had said, "Israel is my son, my firstborn son." And so the prophet Hosea is referring to how God called Israel out of Egypt. But additionally, the book of Matthew says that Hosea was also speaking about the Master Yeshua. We've mentioned previously how when Yeshua was born, Herod wanted to kill him, so he had to flee to Egypt. And then God said, now you can go back to Israel. So the same thing where the people of Israel were living in Canaan, they went down to Egypt, they sojourned there for a while, and then God called them out of Egypt back to the land of Israel. The Master Yeshua did that too. All right, so back to the episode.
And it's crazy how this mixed multitude also went up with them. It shows the Egyptians had seen the power of God. They recognized the God of Israel was above all of their gods, and the people of Israel were God's people. And so they wanted to be with that God and with those people.
It's similar to, I've mentioned this verse multiple times, but it's similar to Zechariah, where it says that people from all the nations will grab the garment of a Jew and say, "Let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you." These people want to be with Israel because they've seen what the God of Israel can do.
God had said with that last plague that he would pass through Egypt and strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt and on all the gods of Egypt. He would execute judgments. I am Adonai. All the people of Egypt saw.
Their gods were put to shame.
Yeah, it's not just the people of Egypt that were put to shame, but the gods of Egypt have been judged and found to be nothing.
They couldn't do a thing. They replicated the first few plagues.
But when it came to what really mattered, the power over life, it was found that these gods were a sham. These gods were nothing compared to Adonai, the God of the Hebrews. And a multitude of people saw it. A multitude of people said, I'm afraid of that God, and I want to follow him. I don't want to be under this judgment. This shows the power of what God can do through Israel. What God can do when he makes a distinction between Israel and the nations. When he delivers Israel, when he takes that whole people for himself.
It's a light that shines like nothing else.
And it makes it so that all the people around them realize there's nothing for me here, only judgment. But they have the great God, and I want that God. And it's so when they follow along with Israel, they're brought near to the God of Israel. That's the way they can reach that one true God, because God chose Israel and separated them to glorify himself and reveal himself through them.
Because the reality is that the only way to God is through the Messiah Yeshua. And the Messiah Yeshua came through Israel. Yeshua is a Jew. Yeshua himself says salvation is from the Jews. Without the Jews, there can be no salvation for the rest of the world. Now, it doesn't mean that other peoples need to become Jews. Through Yeshua, Jews and Gentiles alike are fellow citizens in the household of God, and we can draw near together to God as Israel and as the nations who have been brought near. But God called the people of Israel to be near him first so that he could draw all peoples to himself.
We've talked about how much of the promises of Abraham are being fulfilled. There's one other promise that came even before all those other promises. Blessed in you will be all the families of the earth. Mm. God is beginning to show a hint of that even here. People who are not descended from Abraham
are being blessed by the God of Abraham.
And they're being able to see the God of Abraham through his descendants. Now, the fullness of that prophecy comes through Yeshua, who is himself a blessing to all the families of the earth and a seed of Abraham.
But more than that, it'll also come when the people of Israel, the Jewish people, are shining Yeshua's light. Yeshua brought salvation. He brought blessing. But God has given it to the Jewish people to uniquely spread that blessing, broadcast that light to all the nations. It says that even when Jews reject Messiah, there's a way made for Gentiles to be saved and reconciled to God. But when the Jews receive their Messiah, it will bring life out of the dead for the whole world. That's the power that God can do through Israel. Yes, he brought salvation to this mixed multitude by letting them go up with them. Yes, he brought Yeshua, who brings salvation to everyone on earth from sins. But ultimately, one day, the people of Israel will be the ones who broadcast Yeshua's light in a unique way that no one else can, and bring Yeshua's salvation that he paid for, bring that so that everyone can see and everyone will believe in the God of Israel.
As God says through the prophet Isaiah to the people of Israel, I have set you as a light to the nations for salvation to the ends of the earth. When the people of Israel shine that light, it brings that salvation, not just to those around them nearby.
It's to the ends of the earth.
Every single person on this planet will see it.
So after Israel is finally out, there's one verse that doesn't look particularly interesting depending on the translation that you use. But we'll just take a quick look at it here. Well, we'll try to be quick. In Exodus 12:42 in NAS, it says, "It is a night to be observed for the Lord for having brought them out of the land of Egypt. This night is for the Lord to be observed by all the sons of Israel throughout their generations." So NAS makes it seem like it's just a night to be observed for Jews and they're observing it for God. Now read it in ESV.
In ESV it says, "It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So this same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations." So ESV is saying the night of Passover is a night of watching for the people of Israel. The people of Israel are supposed to watch.
Because God watched on that first night. So there's a little bit of ambiguity here because the word that NAS translates as observed and the word that ESV translates as watching, this particular form of the word only occurs in this verse. So that makes it a little bit ambiguous. But even though this word only occurs in this one verse, the root of this word is the same as the word for "you shall observe this day" or whatever. So that's why NAS translates it that way. However, this word is a unique word. It has a common root, but it is a distinct word. And we've looked at some lexicons, and they do indicate that it's a time of watching or a time of keeping vigil.
The root word from which this word is derived is a word for keeping or guarding. And so sometimes it carries the connotation of keeping watch, as it is here. The idea is a watchman is
staying alert to keep watch for the city.
And so he's guarding the city, keeping it safe. And one of the reasons why we can come to this conclusion is because this is also what the people of Israel did the very first time. When they ate it with their belts fastened and their sandals bound, and they ate it in haste, they were eating at attention. They were watching.
They were ready to go at a moment's notice.
Exactly. So in the same way, Moses is saying this night throughout the generations of Israel is a night for keeping alert, keeping ready, watching.
And the reason why he says that is because God did it for us.
And not only did Adonai keep vigil that first night, and the people of Israel keep vigil that first night, but the Master Yeshua also kept vigil on the night of his final Passover and the night on which he was handed over and arrested.
When he went away to pray that night, he told his disciples, stay awake and pray. And then when he found them sleeping, he woke them up and said, you couldn't even stay awake for an hour. So Yeshua is staying awake and he's encouraging his disciples to stay awake on Passover. So it's not super well known, but this verse is indicating that the night of Passover is supposed to be a night where you stay awake, you stay alert, you keep watch, you keep vigil that night to honor what God did for us. And also to remember how we needed to come out in haste all those generations ago.
So now that the people of Israel are out of Egypt, Moses said to them, all the firstborn of the people of Israel belong to God. Whether they're man or whether they're beast, they are God's. And Moses says, when you or your sons are wondering, what does this mean? Why do the firstborn belong to God? You're supposed to remember, Pharaoh wouldn't let the people of Israel out, but God delivered us by striking down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. So because God struck down all the firstborn, but he spared the firstborn of Israel.
Yeah.
The firstborn of Israel owe their lives to him. Their lives belong to God.
And so for the firstborn of clean animals, they're sacrificed to God. For the firstborn of unclean animals or of people, they're supposed to be redeemed. We'll see later how the firstborn are redeemed. But here it says that the unclean animals are redeemed with a lamb, which is a clean animal.
And it says, if you don't redeem the unclean animal with a lamb, then you have to break that animal's neck. So for every firstborn of Israel, a life is owed because of those Passover lambs, because of what God did that first night.
God provided the lamb, and now their lives belong to him. Like these firstborn, God provided the lamb of God, Yeshua, for us, and now we belong to him. We have to give up everything that we have to follow the Messiah.
Now, Moses has one more command for the people of Israel now that they're out. Moses says to them again, remember this day that you came out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Remember that God brought you out. How do you remember? By not eating leavened bread. It's the first month, and when you go into the land, this is the month that you're going to keep this service, this avodah, that you're going to stay away from leaven, get it out of your territory,
and eat matzah.
And eat matzah for 7 days. He's saying how important this is. You're not only not supposed to eat the leaven. It says no leavened bread shall be seen with you. And no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory. And this is so you can tell your sons, it's because of what Adonai did for me when I came out of Egypt. He says it's a sign on your hand and a memorial between your eyes that the law of Adonai may be in your mouth. Getting all the leaven out of Israel every year is for the sake of remembrance. It's for a visible, tangible sign that the entire people of Israel can see to remember the day that they left Egypt.
And similarly, Paul teaches about Passover. In the same passage where he says that Messiah is our Passover, he says, clean out the old leaven of evil and wickedness, that you may become a new batch of dough, so that you may keep the feast with the matzah of sincerity and truth. So basically, Paul is drawing a parallel where the leaven represents sin and the matzah represents righteousness. Basically saying the Israelites, they left all of their leaven back in Egypt, in the land of slavery and bondage and death. And they came out of there with matzah, completely free from anything leavened. And so when Messiah saved us, we were set free from our old lives of sin, of slavery to sin. We're now set free without any sin left. We're made new. We're made clean. We're made unleavened.
Yeah, just as the people of Israel were in haste to get out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. So also, we've been set free, so we should be in haste
to get away from our old lives of sin and death.
Exactly. We should be seeking to get it all out. Leave no leaven in our lives. We should be like the matzah. And when we do that, it's a visible, tangible sign. It's like a sign on our hand or a memorial between our eyes.
It's continually present in our thoughts and our actions. That's what that represents, our thoughts and our actions.
Anyone can see when we are acting without the leaven of wickedness. We can see, and we should always remember how Yeshua delivered us from our old lives and we got out of there in a hurry. And now we are free and we are clean. And so I think the takeaway from this whole portion is to remember and act according to God's salvation. In the same way that God delivered the people of Israel, and the people of Israel in turn have to remember what he did, we also have to remember what Yeshua did for us. The people of Israel have to keep the Passover every year and repeat it to their sons so that they remember. They have to put that blood on their doorposts. They have to eat that lamb. They have to eat that matzah. They have to get all that leaven out of their homes to remember God's salvation and to live according to that salvation. We're called to the same calling. We also need to clean out the old leaven. We also need to eat and drink the Lamb of God. We also need to give ourselves daily to the Master. We need to be constantly remembering what he did for us and living in accordance with that, walking in that freedom and living for his service.
That wraps up the portion of Bo. Next week, we'll be looking at the portion B'Shalach, so be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.